I'm John Davis. It's Tuesday the 19th of May 2015 and we've come along to interview Mr. Paul Register. Paul, would you please introduce yourself and tell me where and when you were born?
I'm Paul Register. I was born on the 4th of April 1954 in North Borneo.
Oh, North Borneo. That's interesting, Paul. Can you enlighten us a little bit on that?
My father was a doctor and he moved out there to become a medical officer for the interior. And so he took out my mother and two sisters, and I was born out there.
How long did you stay there, Paul?
I was only about 18 months old when we moved back, so I know very little about it. I've just got some photographs to remember it by.
Have you ever been back?
No, I got close. I've been to Korea and Japan, but I never quite got to Borneo, which is a shame, and I regret not doing that looking back.
Never mind. Which years did you work at Fielding and Platt, Paul?
I started at Fielding and Platt in 1970 to 1980, and then I returned again in 1996 to the year 2000.
And on that second occasion, what was your occupation?
The second time, I was the works manager.
So, obviously, in between terms, you got quite a lot of experience then.
Yes, I'd gone off to work for a company called Davy, who built large rolling mills and process lines for the steel and aluminium industry. So travelled all around the world, which is very exciting and very interesting.
So you went up north then?
No, I went down to Poole. I lived in Bournemouth and worked for them in Poole.
Right, going back a little bit then, Paul. Tell me, how did you first come to learn about Fieldings?
I can't remember whether I saw it, the advert for an apprenticeship in the paper or whether it was word of mouth, but I applied for an apprenticeship there and went along for the interview and subsequently got offered an apprenticeship there.
Wonderful. What made you decide you'd like to go into engineering, Paul? Anything specific?
Well, I'd always been interested at school in subjects like metalwork, woodwork, technical drawing, and I think it just seemed a natural progression. I enjoyed doing things with my hands and making things, and engineering was a natural progression, I think, to follow on from there.
Which school did you go to, Paul?
I went to St Peter's Secondary School in Stroud Road. It was and still is a very good school. I don't know whether they still do with so much in the metalwork and woodwork, but in those days it was very much an important subject for the school.
You said you were obviously successful with your getting an apprenticeship. Can you remember much about the interview? Interviewed you? Any questions or what?
No, that's so long ago now, I can't remember much about the interview. I can remember it being very very daunting going into such a large factory from school. You're cocooned in school, and to go into a workplace was quite a daunting exercise, really.
Yeah. So, right, you're ready to start work then. And how did you travel there, Paul? Where were you living at the time?
I was living in Hucklecote, and I used to travel by bus initially. And then by moped, and later by car. Of course, in those days, you could go straight over the cross, up Northgate Street, over the cross, and down to Southgate Street. So it was relatively easy to travel there from Hucklecote, where I lived.
Right, and the journey along the way then, Paul, anything particularly you can remember about it? Any particular shops, factories, level crossing gates, or anything of the sort?
No, the one thing I remember it particularly is Walls Roundabout, and then going under the railway bridge there, as I went up through from Barnwood through into Gloucester, up through London Road and down past St Peter's Church, got the old places, and then straight up through town past all the old shops, down Southgate Street, past the old hospital and the docks, and then, of course, into Fielding and Platt, which was rather an imposing place at the time.
I suppose in those days a lot of people travelled in cycled in, didn't they, or walked?
Yeah. I mean, cars were obviously used a lot, and there was a lot in the car park at Fielding and Platt, but, no, a lot of people cycled and walked and went by bus.
So you arrived at the company, clocking in a part of the start?
Oh, yes, everybody had to clock in. In fact, it used to be quite amusing to see some of the cars pull up down the Baker Street. They'd pull up sharpish at the bottom of the door there, run rapidly up to the clocking in machine, bang the clocking in machine, and it's quite surprising how slow they'd walk back to the car. And then they'd go back to the car and then slowly drive up to the car park up and then wander back in.
I don't suppose you can remember what your first week's wage was, can you, as a young apprentice?
No, I can't remember what that was, but I can remember later on, a few years later, I went on to inspection and I was paid the princely sum of £58.20 a week.
My goodness. Sounds like a fortune. What are your memories of that first day, entering the factory the first time? What do you feel about the noise, the smells, whatever?
Well, as I said previously, it's a very daunting sight. You come from a little cocoon called a school, and then you end up walking into this this vibrant engineering factory that you'd only had a glimpse of previously at the interview. And everything seems so big. And as you said, plus so many people milling around, it almost seemed like a small town to a new boy. We were taken upstairs to the apprentice training school. And this is when we first met the other apprentices for the year, which I think was about 25 in our year. Two of whom I'd spend probably far too much time with than I should have done was Eddie Hobbs and Michael Southcott. And we spent a lot of time together.
So you mentioned the training school, and that was one right above the like machine shop, was it?
When we were there, it was actually above the drawing office. There was a drawing office below us, I believe. And it might have been the, or it might have been production control. There were certainly office blocks underneath there. The light machine shop was over in the new building where the other side of Baker Street.
I'm trying to get into contacts. Of course, there were, over the years, there were three venues for the training school. There was right over by the office block, and then there was up where you said, up right up on the top floor. And then later on, a building which I believe used to be the pattern shop.
Oh, right, yeah, I wouldn't know that. We were on the top with a little lift that was going up and down there as well to get some of the material up and down to the workshops. But, we were right up on the top of the building.
So you come to the training school then, Paul. You mentioned a couple of mates. What put me through a little bit of how things went on there, what you did, etc.?
Well, the first year was totally what they called off-the-job training. It was almost exclusively carried out in the apprentice training school. And you were split into two groups initially, so 12, 13 each group. And the first group went to do machining, and the second group did fitting work and assembly work. And then after 6 months, you changed over. And occasionally we'd have lectures from people from the drawing office, etc., in the lecture room, which was associated and attached to the training school.
Did you have to make this work on this infamous block in your day?
Yes. I was going to come to that because you can't get out of it. And I said the most famous job we did was the block. It was approximately 5 inches square and about 2 inches thick. You had to file the ends square and flat. And then you marked a line around the side of the block, about a quarter of an inch down from the top. And then you had to chisel off a quarter of an inch of material and then file it flat and scrape it flat to get at least something like 80% flat. And one of the most abiding memories is the many sore knuckles that you got from missing the chisel with the hammer and banging your knuckles, and the noise as well. You used to get complaints from downstairs that they knew when the block was being done, because all they heard was these hammers and chisels banging away all day long.
Yeah, I think a lot of us went through that. But I suppose it was as much patience as it was learning skills, wasn't it, Paul?
Yes, you had to have staying power to finish the damn thing, because it was hard work. You know, there was a lot to chisel off. But it did give you the skills. You know, you had to sharpen your own chisels. You had to learn how to hold a hammer, because if you didn't, that was when the sore knuckles came about. You had to learn how to file properly, how to scrape, how to blue, how to get it square. And they were all, you know, at the time, you obviously thought that someone was picking on you. But it was all done for a good reason, because it gave you a good sound basis for engineering.
How about the machines in there, Paul? Just coming onto the machining side of it a little bit. What machines do you remember working on?
Oh, we had the conventional centre lathes and mills, and I remember there being a bit of a shaper, a small shaper up there, which occasionally some people used to sit on and have a little ride and go backwards and forwards on it, which health and safety nowadays, heaven forbid, but these things, of course, happened in the training school, probably shouldn't have, and but no harm was done, but it was, you know, boys will be boys.
Who were the instructors up there, Paul?
At that time, it was Barry Degg and Roy Breach and Ron Wilmot was the training officer.
Right, you've spent, what, a 12-month up there, was it?
Yeah, your first year would be in the training school, and I don't recall ever being seconded to any of the workshops at all at that time. And then after the first year, you were then sent out into the wide world of the workshops.
Well, John, one last thing about the training school. Did you make any tools for yourself?
Oh, we made all sorts of things, drill drifts and seating gauges and things like that. In fact, the seating gauges, the little angle gauges, always came in very useful on the machines for setting up the 45-degree tools and the 30-degree tools. So again, you know, it was all useful stuff. And the drill drifts, of course, on the drills, and toolboxes and things. Scribing blocks, we used to make loads of things.
Right, so you left the training school then out into the shops then. So what shops did you visit, Paul?
I went down to the light machine shop, the other side of Baker Street, under the tutelage of Reg Court and Bert Ravenhill, where I was put onto capstans and Herbert lathes. I must admit it was a sight to see Reg Court on a capstan. His arms would be flying around like an octopus, and the smell of cutting fluid as well flowing through the shop. But seeing Reg with his arms moving about at a rate of knots on a capstan was, well, it was amazing. You know, to a young lad who was frightened even to turn the machine on and see this chap moving around the capstan was amazing. Later on, I went over to the heavy machine shop to work on things like the Boco mills, the big 13-inch slotter outside the foreman's office. That was a beast of a machine. Planers, horizontal borers and vertical borers. The foreman at that time was Brian Capener, and the general foreman was Albert Dorr. Of course, there are many characters over in the machine shops, as you remember. A few which come to mind were the likes of Bob Holford, Pete Groves, John Smurthwaite, Ian Pollard, who were more my age, and we used to get up to no good, of course, as usual. And old Fred Grigg, grumpy old Tony was, but bless his cotton socks, he knew his stuff. Will Fostin, in the grinding section, could have your hair cut at lunchtime with Will, if you had the right amount of money on you. And my mate, John Cole, Ginger Cole, who I used to work on the machines with. And John Pierce, we nicknamed him Pee Wee. We never did quite work that out. He was another one of my colleagues who worked on the machines with us together. And Mike Bolton, Ed Summerhill and Phil Brown on the marking off table. Yeah, and many, many others, which I can't remember all their names. In fact, we rang a tuck shop with Ginger Cole. We had a little cupboard on the 10-foot vertical bore, and Ginger Cole and myself used to run the tuck shop there. Used to have everybody from, even the works manager used to come down and get his cigarettes from us. So it was quite a popular little thing, and it kept everybody, I suppose, in the factory. But interesting times.
And did that? So you were in machine shop mode. Did you go into the fitting shops at all?
No, I didn't go into the fitting shops. I stayed in the machine shops and worked, as I say, predominantly on the lathes and the mills, vertical borers, that sort of thing. Though I did have a spell on the horizontal borers with the likes of Jack Price and others. But the Grafenstadt, I think it was a twin column thing, twin spindles.
Right. So all the rest of your apprenticeship then, was it a 5-year apprenticeship or a 4-year?
It was a 4-year mine, 4 years with obviously visits to the technical college in Brunswick Road it was then. I think we did go to a building in the Spa Road a couple of times, but predominantly in Brunswick Road on day release and block release, attending evening classes occasionally as well, to which I completed my craft apprenticeship with EITB certificates and things on milling and milling and boring.
Was it all practical at the college, or a lot of theory as well?
It was predominantly theory at the college, because obviously we were doing all our practical at Fieldings in the craft school and in the workshops, and you had to fill in your old log books with jobs that you'd done, writing down the materials, the tools, the procedures, and that would go to the EITB then, the Engineering Industry Training Board, who would then vet the books, sign them off and send them back. And that's when you finally got your certificate as an apprentice.
Right, can I change the subject a little bit then, Paul? How about the About the canteen, what can you tell me about that and the people who worked in it?
Well, that was a vibrant place at lunchtime, wasn't it? There was lots of people up in the canteen. I remember there were several canteens. Obviously, I only visited the one, which is the one for the workshops, but I believe there was other canteens for the managers, directors and visitors. But we visited one canteen. I seem to remember the food was very good. You know, always used to go up there for lunchtime, so I wouldn't have kept doing that if it wasn't very good. And, of course, the other delight was Iris coming round in the mornings with the tea trolley, with the coffee, hot tea, hot coffee and the food. And on night shift, Norman Curry used to do the canteen on night shift. And I think the most we ever got was he used to warm some soup up, or you could have a plate of salad that was wrapped in cling film with maybe a roll or two. Otherwise, you brought your own in. But, he used to warm the soup up at night, which in the winter was well looked forward to.
How did you get on working nights, Paul? Was it 2 weeks about or longer spells in that?
Yeah, on the bigger machines, of course, they wanted to keep them rolling, keep the production going, and you had to do a minimum of 2 weeks about, but most people chose to do a month about because it was a lot easier on the body. To change every 2 weeks was a bit daunting. But, we used to do a month about. In fact, at one stage, you did a spell for 9 months solid on nights, but it helped to get the deposit for my new house, so it served a purpose.
But was it time and a third or something, wasn't it, for working nights?
Oh yeah, it was something like that, and it was you worked four 10-hour shifts, and then obviously you could come in a bit earlier and you could stop on to 7:30, which we used to do in the mornings because you could tie up with your day shift partner then, and you could work Friday nights. There's a funny story about that. Jack Price used to work nights. He was asked by, I think it was Norman Davenport, Jack, why are you working three nights? And as I said, it used to be a four-night shift. And Jack's reply was, I can't manage on two.
Oh, wonderful. Right, going on from the canteen then, Paul, how about sport and social activities? Did you participate in any of those?
Well, much as I am now, I'm more of a spectator than a doer. But yes, we did go down to the social club in Submeadow Road occasionally, and I did a few times have a game of Skittles down there. But I would probably be more propping the bar than doing any sports, as most of us young lads were doing at the time.
So your apprenticeship's at an end, you've done the 4 years, and can you tell me what happened then next?
That's when I did most of my time in the heavy machine shop, working on the planers, the mills, the borers, and learning a terrific amount from the guys in there. As I said, we used to work night shift. It wasn't compulsory, but if you went on the larger machines, you knew really you'd had to do a night shift on there because they needed to keep them going. I've worked shifts with the likes of John Pierce, John Cole on the vertical borers, and Bob Holford on the planer mills. In fact, there's a story of Bob Holford on nights on the planer mills. He was doing a block, a nice big hydraulic manifold block, planing the side of it. And he was planing down the side with the side box, and he was getting nicely snuggled up into the overall cupboard and having a little nap. And he woke up to this big thump, and he looked over, and there was this big thump of swarf falling on the floor, far bigger than it should have been. And he realised then that he'd got the side box going down, but he'd also got it going in as well. So instead of taking something like 1/4 inch off, it was taking something like 3/4 inch off. And fair play to Bob, it's the quickest I've seen him plane a block, because he planed it down square and said he misread the tape.
Oh dear, there must have been lots of things like that going on then, mustn't it? So after your apprenticeship was finished then, Paul, how long was it then before you actually left the company?
I started in 70, I left in 80, so it would have been 6 years after I finished my apprenticeship.